Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
There was an interesting news release from Savannah Resources this week. The company outlined several different aspects of its lithium project. Here to tell us more about the situation Savannah's in, what's going to happen now, Emmanuel Proenza. Emmanuel, hello.
Hi. Hi, Alistair. Nice to meet you, and thanks for the opportunity to speak here.
Yeah, nice to see you too. So tell us a little bit about the announcement. You laid out certain factors about the lithium market, certain factors about your project, and certain plans you've got. It looks like you're in a pretty good position there.
Yeah, I think we've tried to keep our shareholders as updated as possible over the course of the year, and this is only another exercise that shows the momentum and the speed at which we are now progressing. I think that the company has changed significantly over the last year and a half. It is now getting to the stage of delivery, and it is getting to that stage of delivery that is so important for companies like ours, at a moment that is quite appropriate. The lithium market is recovering fast. The world has understood that it needs critical raw materials to projects to speed up brutally, and especially in European territory. That has been understood as something important and something that needs to be delivered at scale by a handful of projects that are in position to do that, and there are not that many projects that have the scale and the ability to deliver over the coming political cycle, let's put it that way. So it is an important moment, and we're very excited to be well positioned to take advantage of it.
So when you talk about delivering, what you're really talking about is a move to production, isn't it? I mean, you guys have been developing this project for a long time, and now you're hoping to move into a production status.
Exactly, exactly. This year, 25, was a year in which we tried to consolidate work and to prepare for the execution phase. So we have reinforced our team. We've made it more and more local or based locally. So bringing experts from wherever they were to be in position to deliver locally. We have reinforced ties with the local community, and by reinforcing those ties, we have started to strike a few agreements. We now have a lot of good friends in the region with whom we can engage every day, that we trust and that trust us, which is also very important. We now have a setting that is favorable at a local, at a national, and at a European level. We have seen this recovery in lithium price as an important indication of the pertinence of speeding up, although our project is very competitive and could be working at very low prices. It is always much easier to accelerate a project and to build the project finance, for example, under better market circumstances. We have done a resource upgrade, and that was the last resource upgrade before production, I think. And that was also a very important step. It shows that this is not only Europe's largest spodumene project, it is also one of the large global projects for lithium. We now have a mapped resource of 39 million tons and additional exploration targets that allows us to envisage at some point potentially a project that is above 100 million tons of resource. We've progressed tremendously on the engineering of the project. And we are now, after two raises done this year that were also very important, very well capitalized and with the capital structure that is much stronger for the phase of delivery. And so all of that has been done in 25. After this last raise that we now did in late October, early November, we now have the cash required to progress to DFS and then also to FID. We also have the cash required to buy the Aldeia concession license. That's another concession that is just around the corner for us. It's brutally synergic with the core concession, and it's one concession that we wanted to buy for the last 5 years. So we're now finally in the process of buying it. Putting all of those pieces together, you see the puzzle taking shape. And that puzzle is what makes 26 so exciting, because as it takes shape, the year will be one of purchase of Aldeia, delivery of the DFS, closure of all the procedures that are important to prepare for construction, delivering a project finance, and then towards the end of the year, starting a construction of one of the landmark projects in this lithium to battery value chain that is being built in Europe.
So just to make sure that we get this point correctly, you've got enough cash in the bank to take you to the final investment decision.
Correct, correct. So we, after the raise, our cash position went up to over 20 million pounds, about $27 million, and that is enough for the purchase of Aldeia, execution of the DFS, and then progress to as close as possible to start of construction and to an FID, should everything go acceptably smoothly. We always know that things don't go perfect and that there are bumps in the road, but we are already prepared for those bumps and are already considering a few of them. And as referred, we have a very good cash position to progress to close to FID.
So you mentioned the DFS there. What should we be looking out for in the DFS, or what are the specific, features of the DFS that will make it look like a success for you guys if you can deliver on?
Well, first thing, the DFS itself. Getting to the DFS stage is a strong endorsement of the quality of the project. But second thing, the quality of what you will see there, which we certainly hope that it will further reinforce that this is a project that can work at a global scale with global competition, with the level of competitiveness that is required to endure any market circumstances. We know that lithium will continue to be a volatile commodity. Actually, we know that most critical raw materials will continue to be volatile commodities because they're not established commodities. They're growing at very fast speeds, and that means that demand and supply does not fully match year on year. And that means that in some moments of the various cycles that we'll have in the future, there is a huge opportunity to make money and returns for the shareholders. In the other moments, the project needs to be prepared to endure them and needs to be prepared to continue producing and to continue at some level of normality that allows them to be prepared for for the following cycle. So I hope that you and everyone will see the quality of the project through that level of competitiveness. You will also see size, and you will see ability to execute with a very high level of technical quality and execution capability.
So, in what ways will it be, will the DFS show the project in a different light to earlier economic studies?
It is a very good question. I cannot anticipate everything that should be there. But I can anticipate what I have been speaking, what I have been referring to our shareholders. We do quarterly presentations to shareholder, quarterly updates, and so this, what I have said and I continue to say is that those who look at the scoping study numbers that were published in mid 23 we'll see the basis of what we expect to deliver at DFS, with improvements in some livers, reductions in some other livers. But overall, I would say that updating those numbers to inflation and to a few more adjustments would provide an acceptable picture of what we hope will be delivered at DFS. Also, potentially important and useful for everyone that is seeing this, is that we now have coverage by four research entities, for brokers, and those four have done an acceptable job of trying to fully understand where we're heading. They did site visits, they had their technical people visiting, and so on and so forth. So it is also a good place to be looking at those broker reports. If useful, those have been done by Canaccord, by SP Angel, and by the Iberian Alantra and the Portuguese Caixa BI. So you have a variety of views on what can be expected for the next step.
So lots of serious people taking an interest in you guys then.
Indeed, and I'm very happy with the progress of 25 also in the capital structure. So for those who have heard about Savannah before, you may have seen that in 24 we struck a first strategic deal with AMG Critical Materials. This was basically, by then, the most advanced lithium refining play in Europe, working with the largest spodumene project in Europe. And through that agreement, we struck a first offtake deal, and we also agreed that AMG would provide us an equity injection that meant that they became one of our larger shareholders. It's about 15%, 1.5. On top of that, we started to amass significant interest from Portuguese investors. Portuguese investors who fully understand the country, the risk, and the ability to execute industrial projects. They are mostly industrial players, and who know how to see an opportunity in a sector that they understand. After that, over these two raises, what we saw was, first, full endorsement by these cornerstone investors. Actually, some of them tried to increase their stake in the second raise. But we also saw more and more institutional investment into the company. So we went from about 3.5% of the company in institutional hands at start of the year to about 12% of the company in institutional hands at this stage. And in those institutionals, you see a variety of players. You see some of the more credible names in the minerals space. So people who fully understand what it's like to deliver a mineral project, people who fully understand what is happening in the battery sector because they're also experts in batteries. And then more and more Portuguese and Iberian investors who are seeing this as an important opportunity for them and for the country. So the capital structure is now stronger, and it is supported by people who know what they're doing and who know how what they are assessing. Perhaps interesting also for you is the fact that this last raise was actually oversubscribed, which is something that you don't frequently see in the junior mineral and mining space, but further reinforces that we are moving from the junior space into the producer space as we speak.
Well, and perhaps a little bit to do with the recovery in the lithium price, which you mentioned a little while ago too.
Indeed, indeed. The reason why we did two raises this year was actually because the first raise was in market circumstances that were particularly tough. So it was more or less at the worst moment for lithium prices over the last few years, over the last many years, actually. And since then, the recovery was significantly marked. And obviously, that's together with delivery on Savannah's side made the success of the second effort.
So let's talk about your plans for the project then. You mentioned that it's one of the largest spodumene projects in Europe. Will it be one of the largest by production as well when you actually get it up and running?
It is the largest in spodumene resource in Europe. So I wouldn't spend perhaps too much time comparing to other European projects because we see our competition as global. This is a global market, and we need to be prepared to compete against Australian players, against African players, and to bring something new to the market with competitiveness, of course. But if you want, in the spodumene space in Europe, you only have one other place in which there is a strong project that is already in advanced stages. That's in Finland. And it's the Keliber project supported by Sibanye-Stillwater. And that one is almost in production already. So they have done most of the construction and they are almost in production. So 26 will be the year of production for them. They're not listed, Sibanye is, but we see them as the confirmation that doing these things in Europe has become possible again. Then the other spodumene space is northern Portugal, and it is significantly larger. The mineralogy is also very clean, which allows for very good recoveries. And in that region, you have the geological conditions for spodumene to appear. And in our concession area specifically, we've worked over the last 10 years to fully prove that spodumene is not only there, it is fully workable and at scale and also at competitiveness, at strong competitiveness level, sorry. In Europe, you see other lithium plays, but they are either very small spodumene plays or they are plays in other minerals that are much harder to process and that can build projects, but projects that will face a much tougher path both to production and to full competitiveness. And so we see ourselves as being very well positioned to serve the European space. But again, we want to be relevant in the global space and not only the biggest in a market that doesn't have that many alternatives.
I mean, it's interesting to sort of talk about the positioning of a company like Savannah in terms of Europe and the world, because there's a lot of back chatter about resource nationalism these days and trading blocs looking to secure resources. But on the other hand, lithium, as you say, is a global market. And then there remains a question of where you send the product to. So can you tell us a little bit about what the product is going to be in terms of the type of product you're making and then what you plan to do with it afterwards?
Sure. Until now, although the question has been put to us in a variety of fashions and in a variety of conditions, a few refiners or prospective refiners have talked about us entering the refining space as partners, as minority shareholders, or other in other facilities. We have and think that we will serve our shareholders better by sticking to mining and purifying spodumene and then selling the spodumene. We believe that that is a specialty in itself. We believe that there is very strong value to be delivered there. The capital allocation logic is very clear and it's very different from refining play. The risk that you take and the path to full production at scale is also very different. So we want to be fully focused on delivering a very high quality spodumene project. So what we want to sell is spodumene with a set of byproducts. That's feldspar, quartz, mica, and feldspathic sands. That's byproducts. The core is the spodumene. For a project like this to be delivered and to deliver significant value, it is important that it is again competitive at a global scale. And at the same time, that it helps the European value chain develop as fast as possible. Because the sooner there is a European value chain, the sooner we can place our products locally. There is more strategic value. The supply chain will be smaller and more efficient, and so on and so forth. That is very obvious for everyone. What we have seen in the last 2 years is an acceleration of that construction of the battery value chain. In Europe and around Europe. I don't think that everything will be ready when we are in production, but I do think that a few pieces will already be there. AMG Critical Materials, our partner, already has an operating hydroxide finishing plant. Keliber, that I have referred, will have an operating refinery by next year. We see another potentially 10 projects of refineries around Europe, starting from Portugal, but also in France, in the UK, in Germany, and elsewhere. And these will at some point get to production. But we also see Sichuan Yahua building a refinery in Morocco, for example. We also saw CATL starting the construction of their larger battery plants in Spain last week. We saw Keliber entering cold commissioning stage now. We are seeing CALB in Portugal starting the construction of their battery plants. We're seeing DST in northern Portugal starting the recovery of and recycling of batteries right now. It's this month that they will start to do recycling at an acceptable scale. We're seeing a lot of players that are international, from LG to Samsung to so many others, investing in building production facilities in the European space. And we want to be positioned as well as possible to serve those end customers by helping to accelerate the delivery of refining projects. At the same time, we have this year we got visits from Japanese players, from South Korean players, from Chinese players, from North American players to our project, because they are excited to see another project developing and being able to deliver with the level of quality and competitiveness that we can. So I think that us delivering this project is a very important anchor for the acceleration of the deployment of the full battery value chain in Europe.
So you mentioned project finance a little while ago. Will there be an offtake component to that, talking about all these visitors that you've had to site?
Potentially another offtake on top of the offtake that we already have with AMG Critical Materials. But yes, potentially. Interestingly, we have also seen a change in appetite by banks. And so a project finance exercise is a complex exercise. It requires a lot of moving pieces to be put together, but it is also a set of options that you have. And the more options you have on the table, the more you can play with them. And what we have seen in the last year is an acceleration of European institutions, be them public or private, and that is working towards in our favor. So I think that we will have a set of options to build this project finance. We are seeing appetite by commercial banks. We're seeing strong appetite by development banks, be it the European Investment Bank that has started to do investments in this space, the KfW, with whom we already have an LOI and with whom we continue to progress. But for others, potentially BPI France, also doing a lot of interesting work in the space, and a set of commercial banks, private equities, royalty companies, commercial debt providers, and so on and so forth. So there are a lot of options on the debt space or on the debt to equity space. It is also important that we have a stronger cap table for the equity options to be there also, and to be as strong as possible for everyone. We still have the control of most of our offtake, which means that that additional offtake option is on the table, and that allows us to potentially play with refiners, with big companies in the battery value chain, and even potentially with traders. And then there is still the grant side of things. We saw Sinovec striking a good deal for a grant this week. We saw Vulcan also striking another one a few months ago. We see ourselves much better positioned than these two, and obviously there is work ongoing in that front. I cannot say more about it at this stage, but I would certainly hope that grants will be part of the equation.
So, what's going to happen then in terms of project finance in regard to the timetable? You're going to put the DFS out. Are you going to sort of go straight into it? Do you expect it to take a while? How do you see it sort of
No, we're being more ambitious than that. We have started project finance work, even though we are yet to deliver DFS. So we want to shorten the time between DFS and FID as much as possible. And these first exercises of bringing an advisor to the table, starting to engage with the various potential PF providers has started quite well. It has already started, and it has started quite well. First signs in the market sounding exercise that we're doing right now are very encouraging, very, very encouraging. And we want to do as much of that exercise as possible in parallel to preparing the delivery of the DFS, again, to shorten the time between DFS, FID, and then start of construction.
Right, so when do you hope to start construction then?
Later next year, as referred, 26 will be a very big year for us, and it will be a very important year for us. We will have DFS delivery, project finance, start of construction. Before that, the FID, of course. We will have the acceleration of construction of gathering of the local team. We will have acceleration of engagement with so many potential partners that we have in the region. There is a lot that can be done and that will be done in 26 in parallel with potential additional strategic partnerships if and when required.
And so how long will the construction period take, can you say at this point?
For a spodumene project, our process is very simple from a technology perspective. It's well established. Obviously, the operation of a big project is always complex, but there is no significant technology risk here because what we're doing is what has been done and improved over the last 10 years in Western Australia. And part of our team has brought that expertise of Western Australia into Europe. So it is a rather simple plant. It has a crushing unit, a DMS, a MagSep, and a flotation unit. And putting all of these things together requires about 18 months of work. All the support infrastructures, same thing. Some of them require about 12 months, 15 to 18 months, some others. So we are targeting 18 months of construction. Obviously, there is always the need to be prepared for either doing it a bit faster or taking a bit longer, but I would say between the 15 and 21 months at most.
What do you think is going to happen to the lithium price in the meantime? Have you got any view on that?
Well, it will continue to be volatile. That's the first answer and the most honest one. What I also think is that the sector has tested the limits of volatility in the last 3 4 years, both upwards and downwards, and it is very clear that those limits are there. So I think it would be very, very strange if we would have prices going up again through the roof until the $8,000 per ton on the spodumene or even more. I would also think that it would be very strange and potentially very problematic for the industry if the prices would go down back to the $600 level. So I would say that it will continue to be volatile, but potentially more towards the direction that it has had in the last 6 months. If you look at these 6 months, you went from 580, that was the minimum of a single day. Obviously, probably there was no trading or almost no trading at that in that day. Now to close to 1200, so it's 100% growth in spodumene price in only 6 months. It is a lot of volatility. At the same time, all PRAs seem to acknowledge that that 1200 is the minimal limit for incentive to acceleration of construction of new capacity to serve the huge demand that is coming. They frequently refer 1250 to 2000 as a range for an incentive price at the levels that are required for the speed of growth of this industry. So I don't have a crystal ball. I know that it will continue to be volatile. What is important for us is that even at 600, we could continue to operate and we could continue to have some level of normality in our project. And if we can endure those very tough times if they come again, which is certainly not the norm for the industry. We saw the annual results and the quarterly results of these first half of the year of all the producing players, and we saw that there was blood on the street at 600, even at 800. If we can endure those times, we can be a very, very good bet for any shareholder at higher prices.
Yeah, it was hard going, wasn't it, for a while?
It was. I imagine that it was and is very hard for those who have to live through those times with projects that are bleeding money. It is very, very hard for them to go through those stages. It is also not very pleasant to be pre-production and to see the markets at those levels. You need to be confident that you're doing the right thing. You need to be confident that you have the right partners and that you can continue to accelerate. And that was something very good for us. We kept going and we kept progressing at very at high pace through the bottom of the cycle. And that is very important because it allows us to be very well positioned for the market uptick and the recovery, right? So that is why it is so important to distinguish between projects that can endure tough times and projects that need very good times to deliver money for shareholders. All those projects are important for the future of the industry, but some can accelerate at any stage of the cycle and can be in position to deliver free cash flows when the market is in our favor, and the others will always have a bit more tougher moments when the market goes against them.
I mean, when we see the DFS, we'll know exactly what you're talking about there in terms of how robust the project is. So
Of
we'll
course.
obviously look forward to those numbers that are coming up. You mentioned though demand, and you referred to the cycle a second ago there. The Savannah project has got a reasonably good life ahead of it, and you're also, as you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, sort of adding to the ground there too. So you guys are sort of in it for the long haul here, really, aren't you?
Correct. 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 I would say that these resource upgrade really shows to the world what we already thought was there, and it is a very good spodumene area. It is an area in which you can operate for decades, and that is very important for us because we want to be building something that is fundamentally good and important for the system and for the region also. By the way, being able to operate for decades means that you can hire members of families, means that you can re-energize a full region. And this is the region in which we operate is a region that has been tremendously harmed by the last 40 years of emigration and loss of opportunity. So it is a region that is impoverished. It's actually one of the poorest regions in Western Europe, and it has lost a lot of its population. We're lucky that our concession area is in a valley that has an industrial pine tree forest and a bit of abandoned land, so there is no human construction that needs to be moved. No one needs to be moved for a project to work. But we are also lucky to have communities in the region that will benefit tremendously from the development of the project. They are actually already starting to feel that at a small scale, just because of the drilling that we did, because of the construction of the local team that we did. We now have employed people, at least one or two people from all the villages around us. We actually have also prepared a few houses that had been abandoned for 30 or 40 years to host people that we have brought to the region. And that is movement, that is activity, and that is also what people think is very important for them. We also have a set of very good stories that we're proud of. For example, the case of a gentleman who came back from almost 20 years of emigration in France and back to his home village in a stage of his life in which he can be part of the active population for the decades to come. We also saw a lady who came back from almost 20 years in Porto and came back to her home village with her husband and her kid. This was the first kid in the village in years, in many years. So these things are exciting, and they're also part of our mission, the mission to develop a project that is very important for shareholders, for Europe, for the world, and for the local community that really deserves an opportunity to thrive again.
Right. So, I mean, it's going to be a transformational year next year for you, and obviously the coming years as well, as you actually move through construction and get into production. So, perhaps to close us out, Emmanuel, you could just once again reiterate the news flow that's coming to tick it off, and to the best of your knowledge, sort of what, when it's going to happen.
Yep, sure. So 26 will be a very important year for Savannah. It's a year of delivery and a year of start of construction. So we expect to have DFS in the first half of the year. We expect to progress in the project finance through the first half of the year and to strike the full project finance deal around post-summer. And we expect to start construction towards the end of the year. And these are three very, very important milestones for any company in our position. They are very important risk mitigators, they're very important value deliverers, and they are very important steps towards what is our most important mission, which is to be in production as soon as possible for the benefit of Europe, for the benefit of our shareholders, and the benefit of the world.
Emmanuel Proença from Savannah, thank you so much for joining us today.
A pleasure. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.